Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are joined by Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. Now, Mark, we were all chatting off mic, and some interesting concepts were being thrown around by you regarding this whole concept of transitory for inflation, but then taking that a step further to this reopening trade and consumer spending. Look, there's no denying that when the world was shut down, especially the U.S., North America broadly, people were cooped up. And when stuff starts opening, everyone really rushes out. There's this pent-up demand that there's no denying that that has already started to happen. So it's this whole reopen trade. But it ties in hand with inflation here, where you think there's a potential that all of this, inflation, the reopening trade, and consumer spending could be transitory, and we could have already seen the peak behind us because of the fact that at least some states have been open for months now. Take us through this general concept and how it could play also into currencies and markets, please.
Yeah, sure. So here's the big picture. Here's how I'm thinking it's evolving is that as the economy recovers, of course, we know about the base effect and we know about the bottlenecks causing price increases. And as the economy opens, more activity, and as the economy opens, that means that this pent-up demand that we have in the household level, it means that the fiscal policy is the sort of peak is behind us. That is the government's support programs. The next step really is we have some new programs launching for family support, for child support in July, but the big packages are going to be gradually coming to an end. And so that some of that fiscal punch will be leaving. I'll give you an example of what that means is that this year, the Congressional Budget Office, its nonpartisan group of research for Congress, has a U.S. budget deficit at 13.5% of GDP. Next fiscal year, it falls below 5%. Now, I know 5% is still large, but that 8% decline, 8 percentage points of GDP, less fiscal support. So household demand, people like myself, who now we can go out in public and go to a ball game and go to stores, spending some money, that pent-up demand, that also is going to be exhausted. I mean, of course, we're still going to be going shopping and going to ball games, but that increase becomes much more stable. And so what I'm thinking is that the economy is either peaking now or going to peak in Q3. And that what we need to, it's not just prices that are going to be transitory, but this business cycle. I mean, we haven't repealed the business cycle. So again, from the Congressional Budget Office, this is what they're talking about. And again, they're nonpartisan. They've got growth this fiscal year, which ends in September, at 7.4%. Next year, they got slowing to 3.1%. And in 2023, 1.1%. So in the big picture, I've got the less monetary support, less fiscal support, the exhaustion or the satiation of the household demand. And then the other thing I'd point out, I know you're really interested in commodities, is I'm watching the price of oil. And it keeps going up. And it looks to me like the OPEC Plus group and the U.S. shale producers are showing a lot of restraint here. In the face of, say, I think we hit $75 a barrel for August WTI. And what I notice is that, again, from a big picture point of view, is that before the past three business downturns in the U.S., oil prices doubled. And oil prices once again have doubled, not since last April when they were negative, and that was a fluke. But we just go since the vaccine. Oil prices have doubled, and they might not have peaked. I mean, I see a lot of calls for $100 a barrel for oil. And so when I put all these things together, I think this is the best things get. And that's what concerns me going forward. I think people are still thinking that somehow, because this business cycle was caused by the pandemic, that somehow we've repealed it. And I'm suggesting that just like prices are transitory, the price increases are transitory, growth, the business cycle hasn't been repealed. And this is probably the best that growth gets.
Well, Mark, that's an interesting point of view to take. And I haven't heard a lot of people talking about this. But if growth is transitory, and if we've seen kind of the biggest part of this push, or we're in the middle of the biggest part of this push in growth. Do you think we're at risk then? And I hate even saying this, but are we at risk for a market correction? Because if the last few recessions have been preceded by a doubling of the oil price, if people are overly optimistic, and you mentioned off mic that a lot of businesses have invested in growth and they've poured a lot into it, expecting this continued rise in growth. If we don't see that, and if things taper off here, even just flatline, but worse, if they were to decrease over time, as those estimates indicate that year over year, we may start trending down. Are we at a risk for a real kind of market correction, deflationary type of event, a full-on recession that everybody's been asking about for a decade or more than a decade? Are we actually at this interesting place where we could see a legitimate recession?
Well, I could think we could see a recession, an economic downturn, but what it means for the stock market is a different story. I'm not sure how anchored the stock market is to the economy. I think about what happened last year. A very strong stock market, a very weak economy. And so I wonder if the stock market just has a different function now than reflecting the economic tide. I mean, if I'm right in this business cycle, we might not get above 2% yield on the 10-year bond for a whole business cycle. Negative real interest rates. And what does that mean? To me, it means that people have little choice for most of us who choose between stocks and bonds. They have little choice but to stay in the stock market.
Well, I have one more question then about the commodities you brought up, Mark, because if the demand is not going to be there, and if China is dialing back a little bit its manufacturing of goods, and it's actually been dumping commodities in the market, it's been dumping metals into the market, and it's been doing strategic agreements where it's been supplying other businesses with its reserves, if there's going to be a slowdown in consumer demand, if on the other side of the equation, if the production coming out of the East is going to slow down, then won't the commodities get hit as a result of that?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? I just don't know about, I'd want to unpack the commodities. I think that the grains right now are primarily weather-driven. I think oil is driven by, the U.S. shale producers, and the OPEC is showing a lot of restraint given how high oil prices are. And I think they got control of the market. And so if you tell me about commodities, which commodities, I'd say, yeah, maybe the metals, especially the industrial metals. I see copper is, even though some other metals are trading stronger, we've got copper looks a bit heavier. And I wonder if we break down commodities and just focus on those that are really used for industry, like the metals, maybe there's where you see the weakness. And to your point, it does look like China is tapping into its own strategic reserves. Just like, it's not so different than what the U.S. is talking about in order to have this infrastructure measure. One of the compromises is they would tap into U.S. strategic reserves, oil reserves. Same kind of concept, but China's just got more of these reserves and in the metals.
Mark, what about currencies too? Because look, the dollar plays into this whole narrative too, right? If we are going to see a pullback in spending, if we are going to see a general rollover in this reopened trade, and maybe not even a bounce back to some of the peaks that we had seen in the last couple months, the U.S. dollar has been a mixed bag. It's rebounded recently. Today, maybe turning back down, but still in the 92 area. How are currencies going to play into this fade in the reopening and consumer spending and fiscal spending?
Yeah, sure. So I think there's two big considerations here. One is the market positioning. And it does look like even though the dollar index has bounced lately, and that by bouncing lately, I mean even it's up 5 out of the past 6 weeks, that the speculative community is still short the dollar. So there hasn't been a capitulation yet. But we are beginning to see signs. I mean, because the dollar has been rising for so long, of course, the technical indicators are stretched. So in the big picture, my concern is those countries that are doing better today, especially better today, like the Canada, which is really the strongest currency today, it's almost up 1% against the U.S. dollar, even though the economic data from Canada is relatively poor. Canada has a big outside down day, potential key reversal in the making there. The Aussie and sterling, also likely ahead of the U.S. in the queue to adjust policy, are doing better. And so I sometimes wonder then if the dollar has two roles. Sometimes it's the driver, and sometimes it is at the fulcrum of a seesaw. And those countries like Japan and Switzerland are going to lag behind. And so I think those currencies lag. But I'm still concerned that given the size of the U.S. trade deficit, and we just reported it again today, another very large trade deficit, over $70 billion, that large trade deficit and still the large budget deficit. I mean, we're talking about, even at those CBO figures, right? We're talking about almost 5% GDP next year. Given the size of the deficits, I think the U.S. has to offer higher interest rates. But our 10-year yield has fallen about 8 basis points this week, and we're still, say, we're hovering around mid-140s, 1.4%. It's just incredible to me. We're talking about 5% headline CPI. And so without that higher interest rate, I think the dollar has to bear more of the burden. And so I do recognize that the dollar's strengthened a bit more than I thought was likely, but it hasn't taken out the kind of levels like, say, 117 or so in the euro that would, I think, would force a capitulation, or maybe 125, 126 in Canada, or maybe it's 73 cents in the Aussie. I don't see the capitulation yet, and so in terms of the price action. And so I think that we should expect to see a weaker dollar on a trend basis.
Okay, summarize this then all for us. Mark, if we have reached, again, the peak of inflation, consumer spending, fiscal spending, at least for the next, I don't know, 6 months, 12 months here, where does that leave markets then? You even said markets are disconnected, commodities, maybe they could pull back. What's your overall take then on what investors should be doing? What are you going to be doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. What I see happening scares me, and that is that it scared me most of this year, which is really why my own personal accounts underperform. You know, we've had a good run in the stock market in the first half of the year, but the indexes have done well, but a lot of weakness underneath. And so trying to find good value, I think, is just hard to find right now. And so I think it's being sensitive to pullback. So I'm looking for some kind of confirmation, higher conviction trades, not just today's price action. I want to see some follow through next week before I'm really convinced that the dollar's turned lower. Same thing with equities. It hurts to say this, but I think that the rule still is you've got to be prepared emotionally and materially to buy pullbacks. And so far, like, we haven't seen one for quite a while now.
You're right. We haven't. But when we did see a pullback, boy, oh boy, was it quick, and also just took everything down with it. But then everything bounced back really quickly. So here we are, more than a year past that initial COVID lockdown, and stuff's opened back up, and we have seen data rising, economic data rising. But if you're right that a peak has maybe already come, then we do need to be, I guess, a bit more cautious. But in all fairness, boy, oh boy, these markets can sure keep on surprising us to the upside. Mark, thanks as always for your time. Great chatting with you. I'll post a link below this interview to your blog, Mark2Market, and we'll chat again next week. Have a great long weekend, Mark.
Thank you. Good luck, everybody.